means to say that it's a qualitatively differentiated experience that is indescribable. It's indescribable. The only one that can perceive it is to a degree, of course, is the Talmud Chacham, like the Rambam says. That the greater a person is, the more he has a vision and understanding of what that state is. But the only one that truly knows the state is God. Okay. That state will be for Olam Haba. The Gemara says, look at Shmuel. This is Machlokas. Why? Because Shmuel said, "In bein Olam Hazeh, Yimos HaMashiach, HaLashib HaGolos Bavad." Shmuel said, there's not going to be such a state on this world. Not going to be such a state on this world. The only difference between Olam Haba and now is Shibud Golis, which means to say that the Jews will be free, and they won't be under the domination of the other nations, and there'll be a free nation to learn the Torah and to live according to the precepts of the Torah, the system of the Torah, and to enjoy the benefits of the system itself. And that's the that's really what Olam Haba is. Nothing more. Nothing more. There won't be any changes. Rambam goes with that super best thing. But there's another mandama that holds. No, that Olam Haba really will be a total change on this world, a categorical change of existence. Shmuel says no. The Gemara says no. Okay. Now the Gemara says like this. Yeah, the Gemara quotes Pasukila Yechdal Avyomi Kerarots. Means that the world goes on and there will always be poor people. there won't be any change with regard to the Gemara says Yechdal Avyomi Kerarots. It means that a poor person is a phenomena, a certain phenomena of poverty won't change. Phenomena won't change. Okay. Now, Vamra Chia, Barab Amechon, Kol Levim Kulam, now the last statement. Kol Levim Kulam lo nisnabu ela lebalei tshuva. All the Nevi'im only spoke about balei tshuva, the good that the balei tshuva will receive. Aval tzadik and gemurim, but tzadik and gemurim is a different phenomena. Ayin lo rosa lekin to lo secha. You see? Tzadik and Gemurim, you can't describe the good that the Tzadik and Gemurim are going to receive. Because it's a different kind of a good. It's indescribable. Even the Navi didn't know what it was. Only God knows what that good is. Because that good is a good in which the Tzadik and Gemurim will be able to exist in a way that the nucleus of their perfection will be satisfied. And that's a different type of a phenomenon. Different type of existence. The Navi can't talk about such things. The Navi can talk about things in terms of what the world situation and the benefits. All the benefits the Navi talks about are basically something that's perceivable to man, because we recognize a certain social state, but it's made up of physical phenomena. But the true good is something which is completely abstract, and it's tied integrally to a certain perfection of the human soul. Can't describe it. Only God knows what that is, because that's the soul itself. The soul itself, when it's removed from all the externals of the physical, and only God knows what that is, and Navi doesn't talk about that. Navi can't describe it. But the Gemara is like this. The Gemara says, meantime, that who is the one that the difference, the Gemara makes a big differentiation between Balei Tshuva and between who? Between Tzaddik and Gemurim. Mm-hmm. Okay, the Tzaddik and Gemurim. Mm-hmm. Now, the Gemara says like this. So the Gemara says, Upligidi Rebbe Avo, but this statement is in contradiction to Rebbe Avo. Why? Because what did Rabbi Avoh say? He said, "Mokum shabal lechuva omdin, tzadikim gemurim einam omdin." By the way, it's the lashon of the Rabbanyana. Einam omdin, einam omdin. Why? Shenema shalom shalom l'rochok v'lakorov amar Hashem. God says, "Peace to those who are far and peace to those who are near." But who does it have first? The ones that are far, l'rochok v'reisha, v'hoda l'korov. So the ones that were far. What does it mean? How does God say peace to the ones that were far? It means the ones that were far and they became close. So those are the ones that God is closest to. You see. Rabbi Yechonam Alach, my rochok shay rochok medvar avera meikar. A rochok means he was far removed from dvar avera. Okay, so Rabbi Yechonam answers the statement. All right? Yeah. Okay. Now, yeah, the Gemara gives us a little bit of what it is. What is this? The Gemara says, "My ain't La Russell is me. Nobody's eye has seen it." A certain wine that's hidden from that's been guarded from the Sheshim Ebrachus. What exactly the Gemara means for that? I don't know exactly. The mushroom. The second one the Gemara says is like it's Eden, that this is referring to Eden. No one has ever seen Eden. And the Gemara says, "Shema Toma Adam Rishon Hechan Haya." Maybe say, "What do you mean? Where was Adam Rishon? He saw it." No, the Gemara says, "Begun. He was in the garden. The Shema Torah, maybe you say, Hu Gan, Hu Eden, that it's the same thing. No, the Gemara says, Talmud Lomar, V'no Yotze Me Eden L'Hashko, says, Agon. Gan L'Chud, the Eden L'Chud. What does it mean to say? What it means to say is that it is a state of existence that's even higher than Adam Arishon Kodem Chet. That's what it means to say. That's what the Gemara means to say. And such a state of existence is indescribable. That's what the Gemara says. Okay. But meantime, you see, the Gemara is against the Rabbeinu Yonah, because the Gemara says on this very statement that Rabbeinu Yonah quotes, which is b'makom she balei tshuva omdin, afilu, Gemara says tzadikim gemurim yechol lamo. The Gemara seems to say that the tzadikim gemurim are not on the same level, not on as high a level as the balei tshuva. It's a direct contradiction. Okay. So that seems to be difficult. There's another Gemara also that adds to the difficulty. Why? Because the Gemara says in Yuma, the Gemara says that with regard to tshuva, the Gemara says in Yuma, Gemara says in Yuma that peivav v'mid beis. The Gemara says. Amar Rishlan, Gidola Tshuva. Tshuva is very great. She has a donos nasalo gishgagos. When a person does not very amazed, purposefully, it's converted. It's considered as if he did a b'shogeg. He didn't realize. Okay. So the Gemara says, Shenem Ashur Yisrael Hashem Lekecho Ki Choshalta Bavanecho. So the Gemara says, Ho Avon Mezid Hu V'Karalei Michshol. Ashur Yisrael Hashem Lekecho means because he sinned, and now it considers it a michshol. What a michshol is a b'shogeg, not the same thing. So you see that what happens is that the avera was done purposefully is considered as it was done by Gogar. So the Gemara says, Eini, it's not so, Vamar Shlokish Gedola Tshuva Shes Donos Nasal Zlokis Chuyos. This is the famous Gemara. Everybody knows that an avera which is done by Mezid is counted like a mitzvah after he does Tshuva. Right? Shenema B'Shuv Rosh HaMirishoso V'Oso Mishpat Zdogo Aleihem Yichya. The Prophet says, that he when the Russia does tshuva, and the Rambam says the Russia does tshuva, all the affairs that he did is gone. It's as if he will live just like he never did an avera ever. The Gemara says, "Lo kasha, kan me'ava, kan me'yira." The Gemara gives an interesting answer: "Kan me'ava, kan me'yira." That it depends on the type of tshuva. If the tshuva was done me'ava, or if the tshuva was done me'yira. Okay, the tshuva is done me'ava, the tshuva is done me'yira. An interesting Gemara. So you see from the Gemara, though, that there's a state of zedonos, nasin lo zechuyos. So when a person doesn't have ever made it, it becomes a mitzvah. It's as if he did a mitzvah. That's what you see from the Gemara, which would seem to be against the Rabbeinu Yonah, where he says, no, that the person who did an avera, he's stuck forever. He's never on the level because he did the avera. Right, I'd like to try to give a solution to the problem. Because the Gemara brachos also. The Gemara is machlokas, whether you say tzadikim b'makom she tzadikim gemurim mangshavat shiva omdin, say anything gemurim omdin. Alright, also, there's another Gemara also in brachas, an interesting Gemara. Gemara says that chavtesam ralek, the Gemara says in brachas. That's been an interesting Gemara. Gemara says the Gemara says, if a person makes a mistake in all the brachas, so you don't, and he's davening for the Amid, so you don't take him off the Amid. You let him continue that, made a mistake, alright? But, if he made a mistake in the Birkas HaTzedukin, the bracha of Olam HaShina Malki Sikva, whereas the bracha, this bracha, is a bracha in which you pray that those who are the destroyers of Klal Yisrael, the apokursim, the ones who distort the Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebal Peh, that these people should be destroyed. So if he makes a mistake over there, so the Gemara says, no, you remove him from the Omid. Why? Chayshinin Shema Minhu. We're afraid that maybe this man is not the curse. That's why when he came to that bracha, he wasn't able to say it properly. Interesting thing, not the curse, what is davening for the Amid for? It shows you that. What?
Yeah, yes.
But it shows you that there's a different kind, different kinds of apikorsa. Different kinds of apikorsa. It's not apikorsa that doesn't real. It's not apikorsa that is not apikorsa that's outside of the system completely. Of course, he wouldn't go into a shul. But it's not apikorsa that maintains that he's inside the system. But he distorts the system. Like a conservative Jew. The conservatism is a distortion of the whole system of yadas, but they daven. See? But when it comes to this tefillah, they don't like the tefillah. The tefillah is going against them, so therefore they omit the tefillah. Today I don't think the conservatives know. They don't even know that they're permitted. But anyway, at any rate, so the Gemara is a kasha. The Gemara says a Shmuel HaKatan. Why didn't Shmuel HaKatan? Why didn't they remove him? Because he made a mistake in that bracha. So the Gemara says, "Shiny Shmuel HaKatan, do you tikna?" No, Shmuel HaKatan, he was the one that made that was misakin the bracha. So therefore, you don't need to remove him. So the Gemara says, "Funny Gemara, v'nichash dil mahadar bay." Let's be afraid, maybe he changed his mind. Shmuel HaKatan, the Gemara says, you can't trust anybody. Amar Abaye, because Allah has to go with the objective system. You can be Shmuel HaKatan, but you don't know. Don't worry about it. Amar Abaye, Gemiri. No, there's a principle we have. Tavo lo havabisha. The person is good, he's not going to change to become evil. Only if he was evil, then we're suspicious. Gemara says, hello, you tell me he won't change. Vaksiv. Ubishuv tzadik mitzit kaso v'osa avo. The pasuk says when a tzaddik changes his mind, he repents from doing good, and then he does evil. The pasuk, so you see that a person gets tzaddik and he could change. So why don't we say over here he changed also? The Gemara says no. Who Russia made kara? Avo tzaddik made kara lo. That person was a Russia to begin with, but then he became good. He might go back. He can revert. But a person who was always a tzaddik. There's no danger. Shmuel HaKatan was always a tzaddik, so there's no danger that he would ever revert. So therefore, we don't remove. So the Gemara says, "What none?" But we have a Mishnah. Al tama batzchad yom oscha. You shouldn't believe in yourself till the day that you die. Why? Shere Yochanan kain gadol shimish bekuna gadol shmonim shanu lofsof nasas duki. The man was a kain gadol for 80 years, and in the end, he became a duki, not pikaris. So the Gemara says, "I'm a bayah. I'm a bayah. Who yana hu Yochanan?" Yochanan was the same as Yana. So what does it mean? And Rava Ma Yana L'chuv Yochanan L'chuv. Yana, if you say it was Yanai, so Yanai was a Russia, and then he became a Tzaddik. But if you say it was Yochanan, it was a Tzaddik Me'ikar. So you see, so it's a machlokis between Abaye and Rava. So the Gemara says, Hanich L'Abaye, so according to Abaye, it's very good why they didn't remove. But according to Rava holds even a person with a Tzaddik Gomor Kol Yamav, even he can change. So why did they remove Shmuel HaKatan? So the Gemara says, no. The Gemara says, "Shani Shmuel Katan Daschulba," that he began the bracha. Okay, a different answer, but basically, you see the in other words, it's a question of technicality of when you remove. But you see from this Gemara an interesting machlokas amarayim, as to if a person is good to begin with. Here's another question, the same question we're talking about a Baal Tshuva. The person is a Baal Tshuva, so Abaye says an interesting Gemara. Abaye says that if he's a Baal Tshuva, so then you have to be suspicious of him. Rava says, even if he wasn't a Baal Tshuva, you always have to be suspicious of him, even if he's a Tzaddik Gomor. But it would seem to be, the Gemara would seem to be saying, that a Baal Tshuva at least is more suspect. That this Gemara itself would seem to be a contradiction to the other Gemara. The Makom Baal Tshuva Omdin ain't Tzaddik and Gomor Yechon Lamar. Or ain't Tzaddik and Gomor Omdin. Either way. It seems like a contradiction inherently in the Gemaras. Inherently in the Gemara. So what is the... The Gemara says, Tina, I said, believe that. That there was something over there. So what was it? Well, let's understand. So what is it? So what do we do with the Gemaras? I mean, it seems to be a contradiction. Contradiction. Yeah, I think the answer is like this. I think that... The way you can answer these Gemaras is basically perhaps as follows. That the Gemara, I think you have to base it on the Gemara in Yuma. You see? The Gemara in Yuma. So
say?
Gemara Yuma. What does Gemara Yuma say? Gemara Yuma distinguishes between two types of shura, Me'ava and Me'ira. Me'ava and Me'ira. What does it mean to say? It's the same thing that the Rambam mentions in the Shemona Prakam, in his introduction to Avos, that there are two types of tzaddikim. There's a tzaddik that's a kovish yitzro. It means he controls himself. He controls himself. He's able to exert self-control. That's one type of a tzaddik. It's difficult to do the mitzvahs, but he exerts self-control. Then there's a tzaddik that's an oved me'ava. Oved me'ava means he simply has a natural love for Torah, and there's nothing to develop. I mean, one person isn't mechal Shabbos because he's afraid that if he goes over and actually flicks on the switch for a light, he'll be chayav nisa. I mean, how could he do this? He feels a certain yira. That's the first level. The second level is where a person is oved me'ava, means he just has a love of Torah. He has an inherent love for the halachic system. He has to be a Talmud Chacham. Impossible to be oved me'ava unless he's a great Talmud Chacham. The great Talmud Chacham falls in love with the system. Falls in love with the system of mitzvahs and understanding and the Chachmas Hashem that he sees in the Torah. And it's actually a love affair. It's like Shlomo Melech, Shir Shirim Shalom. It's a Yishakenim Yishikospir. It's a love affair. It's an emotional state, in which all the energy is actually it's similar to a person being in love, which means to say that all his energy is directed to the ideas and to Chachma. He has an ecstatic feeling that pervades him. He's just a naturally attached and attracted to it constantly. And when he thinks, he feels a tremendous sense of Ava. It's like an automatic thing. He's drawn to it. Such a person is nothing's difficult. I mean, what he does on Shabbos, I mean, not to be Mechal Shabbos, the question doesn't even enter his mind. I mean, there's nothing that he really cares to do of a physical nature that is even a problem for him, because his love is in the ideas and in the Chochmah. So he doesn't have any physical desires. There's nothing that he desires to do. For him, Shmiras HaMitzvahs is very easy. There's never an assayin for such a person. There's never such a person does not ever cut across a situation and go through a situation where there's an assayin. Assayin means that he's caught because the emotions are dragging him one way. And he says, I shouldn't do it. But there's a desire to do an avera. He has some reason why he wants to do the avera. But a person that's oved me'ava, there's no such reason ever occurs to him, because all his energy is involved in the Chachmas HaTorah, and that and there's no energy left for anything else. So he never has a situation of he's never in conflict. You see, that's the second type of perfection. So you see, what you have to say is follow. So that's what the Gemara says. The Gemara says that if he does tshuva me'ava, which means to say that he reaches the level where he's involved totally in a state in which he's in love with the Torah and he's in love with the mitzvahs, so he Shabbos to him is a beautiful time. I mean, it's a time where every halachic situation is one which draws him. Why? Because every halachic situation brings to mind all the concepts. He puts on tefillin, there's hundreds of ideas. Shabbos, all the halachas of Shabbos come to his mind, and he's completely entranced by it. He's drawn to it and entranced by it. He's thrilled by it. Loves the mitzvahs, because the mitzvahs represent the Chachmas Hashem. And he appreciates it. And every situation is a situation which he's drawn to. On the contrary, a person is not on a level. Shabbos is a burden. Yes, they can't do this. Basa b'chovah is a whole problem. But to the person that is not in the world of the physical, all these halachas represent to him beautiful ideas, and he's drawn to the ideas. Yantif, he's attracted to it. Now he'll go through Ochas Yantif, Ochas Pesach, and Chometz, and Karban Pesach, and Haggadah, and the Sipur, and he's drawn to it like a magnet. I mean, it's not a difficult thing. There's no difficulty. On the contrary, that's the person that's over me'ava. So what the Gemara says like this, that if he's really, it depends, the Gemara says, that when can we say that there's Avonos, Nasnolos, Huyos, is where he's Oved Me'ava, or he's Oved Me'ava. But Oved Me'ira, no. What does it mean to say? It means silliness. That insofar as a person, this, and this is what I think I one time made this premise. I think it's a true one, that the difference, that is not two different people, Oved Me'ava and Oved Me'ira, but both coexist in everybody to some degree. You see, if a person, of course, reaches a certain level of perception, a person reaches a level where he appreciates the Chachmas HaTorah, he has that appreciation, so he partakes of Oved Me'ava. But there are also parts of his personality that are Oved Me'ira. They're not mutually exclusive, Oved Me'ava and Oved Me'ira. But they can abide in the same individual at the same time with regard to different areas of his soul. So one part of him, he could be one aspect, he could be an Oved Me'ava, and then he's an Oved Me'ira too. Both are true. So really what the Gemara is saying is like this, when a person does an Avera, an indelible trace is left upon his soul. Because indulging in a Maisa Avera means that there was a certain satisfaction that he received, that he gained in doing a certain action. Now the satisfaction stamps itself on the psyche. You can't remove it, because the fact that he had enjoyment and the fact that he had satisfaction from this action is something that always keeps his psyche attached to it, attracted to it. And even though he removes himself from the Avera, he controls himself. But the fact is, he can never remove the traces that remain of that Maisa Avera. Whereas if a person never did the Maisa Avera, so there's nothing there to remain. Interesting Gemara. Gemara says that a person should marry before the age of 20. Gemara says if he doesn't marry before the age of 20, kol yom av bavera. Kol yom av bavera. Gemara says, bavera slakabaita? What do you mean, kol yom av bavera? This doesn't mean he's making a prediction. If a person gets married when he's 25, that he's always going to be always going to avera. No, kol yom av behiruri avera. The Gemara says, thoughts are avera. Why? Because it means to say that if the desire reaches a certain point of fantasy, so then certain tracks have been established, certain avenues have been established, and avenues for the exit of. For the exit of his psychic energy. Once those inroads have been made, you can't remove them anymore. Because since a person is basically pleasure oriented, a person is pleasure oriented. That's the way a psyche is. So anytime he has pleasure, the pleasure is like a magnet, attracts him. So even though he realizes he did wrong and he does tshuva, very difficult process. But the fact remains that once he did it, you can't do anything about it. So if he didn't do the Avera, then he never actually made those inroads. So therefore the psychological pleasure was never stamped on his soul. And therefore he's a free person. But if he actually once a person does an Avera, there's nothing that you could do to remove the fact that he actually enjoyed this Maisa Avera. And since the person is attracted to pleasure, it's always going to be there. And what happens is like this, that even though he's kovash yisitra, controls himself, but it always remains there, and he's always capable of regressing back to that type of performance. Because he can't forget the pleasure. But Oved Me'ava means something else. Oved Me'ava means that the person is able to remove all the psychic energy. It's a different concept. All the psychic energy that goes towards the physical in general. He's able to remove it and sublimate it to a higher type of expression. So then, it doesn't matter that he was a balavera before. It doesn't matter, because all the energy is being removed from those areas. You see, but basically the phenomena is true. You see, it's not a matter of two different individuals. Every person is involved in both situations. And that's the machlokas, really. Why is there a machlokas? B'makom shebal etshuva omdin ein tzadikin gemorim omdin. Why should it be a machlokas in the gemara? I mean, so this would seem to be a basic thing. I mean, you mean the chazal are arguing about basics of tshuva and it's out of gemara and who is more perfected? And then you have machlokas in the gemara brachas, whether if he was a Russian, he changes back, or even if a person was never Russia, he's still suspect. I mean, what are all these machlokas? The machlokas are really, it's a question, it's a quantitative question. It's a quantitative question. In other words, both really exist. Both phenomena exist. A person is a Kovish Yisro, and he's also an Ovid Me'avar, a Tzadik. If he's a pure Ovid Me'avar, then of course, there's no question about it. Pure Ovid Me'avar, no question. But the Gemara's machlokas is, with regard to a Baal Tshuva, which means to say, V'makom Shebaal Tshuva Omdin, it means to say that you have to weigh the fact in terms, see, the Rambam says like this. The Rambam says that V'lo Cheschor HaRbesh Reitom Tam Chet U'Pirish Mimenu V'Kovash Yitzro. See, in terms of Krishis HaYetzer, it's a more difficult thing to do. Because since he had the pleasure, so it's more difficult to remove himself. So since he removes himself, it shows that he has a greater distance between him and between the Avera. Because to remove himself from the pleasure is much more difficult. But nevertheless, that doesn't negate the other side of the coin, which is namely, since he experienced the pleasure, he's capable of regressing. It's not a contradiction. Both are true. In terms of Krishis Ayetzer, it's a tremendous advance, because he's able to control himself and remove himself from the attraction of the pleasure. But simultaneously, the fact that he actually did partake of the Avera, leaves an indelible trace on his mind, and there's no way that he can remove that trace. So, and that's the machlokes, really, between whether we say b'makom shebalitshuv omdin, ein tzadikin gemurim omdin. What's the machlokes? The machlokas is, insofar as Kvishas HaYetzer is concerned, really both phenomena are true. It's a question of Kvishas HaYetzer. As far as Kvishas HaYetzer is concerned, both phenomena are true. In one respect, he's greater because he removes himself from the attraction, but nevertheless, the other side of the coin is that since he experienced the chait, and he experienced the pleasure, he's always susceptible. The susceptibility is always there. That's why the Gemara says that the Baal Tshuva is more susceptible. So susceptibility really doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't great. It's a defect. You see, it's a defect of susceptibility. But on the other hand, in terms of Krishna Yetzer, it shows that he has greater strength in Krishna Yetzer. But Ovid Me'avo is out of the realm completely. Ovid is a different level altogether. Ovid Me'avo is a different level altogether. So the Gemara, insofar as what the Gemara says in Yuma, the Gemara says in Yuma that Ovid Me'avo is Avonos of. When do we say that Avonos of Nasim Lo Zechuyos? Avonos of Nasim Lo Zechuyos is if the tshuva goes all the way. In other words, if he removes himself, if he's Kovesh as Yitzro and removes himself from the Avera, that's a big level, because he shows that even though he enjoyed it, but he still can remove himself. Nevertheless, you can't say Avonos of Nasim Lo Zechuyos at that point. Why? Because still there's the other phenomenon, that since he did the Avera, it left a trace, which means to say things get difficult, he's liable to slip back. He's liable, once a person does a Maisa Avera, it's ingrained. It's something which leaves an indelible impression. That's what the Brainiana really says. You can't just remove a Maisa Avera. Yeah, Malchlin Lo, yes, certainly. Mechila, yeah, because he's not going to do the Avera anymore. But the trace is there, and it'll always return. Until when? Unless he reaches the level of an Oved Me'avo. Oved Me'avo means he's completely a different person. And there's no more attraction of the material and the physical doesn't attract him anymore. But he diverts all his energy to the higher higher sphere of activity, different phenomena altogether. Then it's really of course then it's avonosav nasim lozchuyas. Then it's nasim lozchuyas, because in terms of Krishna Yetzer, he has the benefit of Krishna Yetzer, and in terms of the attraction is gone. The only way to remove the attraction of the past action is through Ava. That's the only way to remove it. So what I'm trying to tell you, like, I'm not answering all the questions, because what does it mean at the end of that Gemara? It's not a problem. What I'm trying to answer basically is the two Gemaras. The two Gemaras in Brachas. The one Gemara in Brachas that says, Makom Shebal HaTshuva Omdin, Ein Tzadik Gemara Omdin. And then the Gemara that says that a person can revert back only if he was a Rasha. That's what Abaya says. Rava says even if he was a Tzadik, he can revert back. But the Gemara seems to agree that a Rasha Meikara, even though he did Tshuva, is always capable of reverting back. And the Gemara doesn't mention over there, it's a question of Makom Shebal HaTshuva Omdin. Okay? So the Pshat is that definitely both things are true, in other words. Namely, that with regard to susceptibility, an Avera leaves an indelible trace. That's like the Rabbeinu Yonah says over there. There's no way to remove it. There's no way, except there's only one way to remove it. Only Me'ava. But that means totally Me'ava. But basically, once a person does an Avera, that's what Rabbeinu Yonah says, that if a person does a Ma'is Avera, even though he does Tshuva, he says, it's still, and that's what he quotes the Medrash, right? The Medrash says that it's Eino Doma, it says. What is the Lashon of the Medrash over there? Eino Kemisha Lo Aso. El Aso V'Nimchol. Shegodol Misha Eino Aso. Misha Oso Mochon Lo. What does it mean to say? It means to say that the person who does the Avera, there's no way. In other words, the soul is something which actions have an effect on the soul, and there's no way to remove that effect. There's no way to remove that effect. There's no way to remove the damage. Damage is done. Because an inroad has been made, a point of attraction to pleasure, to a pleasurable taiva has been established in the soul, and therefore he's always capable of reverting. That's impossible to remove. However, on the other hand, it shows as long, I would say like this, as long as the person is omeid b'tzidko, as long as he doesn't revert, he's on a higher level. Because since he's tam chait, and he removes himself to the other extreme, so it means he has a deeper recognition, by virtue of his actions, he has a deeper recognition of what the good is, because he's removing himself from the evil. Even though he actually knows how he's tasted the evil, he knows the pleasure involved. So, in that respect, as a kovash and sitro is better. And that, as long as he is on the betzitka. But if you'll ask me, who is more susceptible, in terms of susceptibility? You see, in terms of, it's a different question. Susceptibility is a different question. In terms of susceptibility, since he has a past, it's more likely that he will revert. We can't predict. So therefore, the Gemara says she would remove him from being a mispalel. Should we remove him? So the Gemara says, Abaya said, no. Since he was a chote once, then we remove him. There's susceptibility. We don't know. But in terms of a kovish as yitro, who is really greater? The person who is more far removed from the chait presently, the one who knows what the chait has to offer, and still removes himself from the situation. Such a person must of necessity have a greater understanding of the good. Has a greater understanding of the good, so he's on a higher level. But on the other hand, there's a machlokes. That's one mandama. That's the mandama that holds makom shebal etshuva omdin ein tzadik nemur omdin. On the other hand, it seems the other mandama didn't maintain that way, but he maintained on the contrary. While it's true, this is a psychological question. It's very hard to resolve it. While it's true that he can remove himself because he's a kovesh yitzro, he removes himself from the chait. He removes himself from the avera. But because he knows what the chait has to offer, you see, it's also an attractive point. It's also a point of attraction. so that he can never be on the level of a person who is not attracted to the chet. In other words, like this, the question is, there's two phenomena, there's a double phenomena. On the one hand, the fact that he had a pleasurable experience with a chet is an attractive point. On the other hand, in terms of exercising conviction with regard to the good, he's on a higher level because he's removing himself from something that, in terms of kavush yisitro, he's better. It's a higher degree of kavush yisitro because he has more of a recognition of what evil is, nevertheless he does the good. So insofar as kavush yisitro is concerned, it's a higher level, like the Rambam says. But nevertheless, the question is, there's a negative aspect because there's something which is always, which will always attract him. So the question is, which way is better? Which way is the gain worth the loss or not? That's the machlokes chazal. That's the machlokes. There's a gain and there's a loss. The gain is that he's able to be kovash yisitro. It shows greatness of the soul, the fact that he can control himself and remove himself from the ma'aseh aveira, even though he knows what it is. But on the other hand, there is something which is bad that has occurred, and that is that there's a point in his history which is attractive to him because he experienced pleasure and it was a chet. So the question is merely which of the two is greater. Question is the fact that he has a gain in kovash yisitro worth the fact that he has an attraction to the ma'isa mer? That's a machlokes chazal. But insofar as susceptibility is concerned, there's no question. If we want to ask who's more susceptible, who do we have to be more suspect of? Definitely the one who, because there's a point of attraction there. So in other words, externally, when we view the individual, we have to be suspect of the kovash yisitro. But as long as he's only the tzidko, the question is, which person is greater? In terms of kovash yisitro, he has the advantage of a greater act of kvishas hayetzer, a greater act of kvishas hayetzer, but simultaneously he has the defect of the fact that he's always attracted to the... He can't remove the indelible imprint. He can't remove the indelible imprint. Unless he becomes an Ovid Me'avah. Yes. Okay. All right. Now, the question, of course, is that Leah Davidov was asking a question about the schar. What about schar? Yeah. Schar complicates the whole matter here. But it's an interesting thing, but the Rambam does mention schar. When the Rambam talks about this very halacha, so the Rambam says that a person shouldn't think, because it's a Baal Tshuva, that he's far away from the level of the tzaddikim. Why? He says he's beloved by God, as if he kilu lochot me'olam. Interesting Rambam. He says v'lo od el shescharo harbe sharei tom tam achetu pirish mimenu v'kavash yitzro. So what does it mean? Amar chacham manus Baal Tshuva amdin entzit nimor lecham lama ba. Yes. What does it mean? It means, you see, schar. That's what I wanted to mention before, that a person isn't just a kovash yisitro. While it's true that the Rambam asked the question, who is greater, the person that's kovash yisitro, controls himself, or a person who naturally loves the good? So the Rambam says the person that naturally loves the good gets more reward, and he's on a higher level, and he proves it. He says there's no way to argue, because the point is, if a person likes evil, that's a defect in his soul. It's an inherent defect. And you can't argue it away. So if a person enjoys evil and controls himself, as much as we want to give him credit for controlling himself, but the fact remains, there's a defect in his soul by the mere fact that he's attracted to evil. So while he's a tzaddik, because no matter how attractive he is, he controls himself. But the Rambam says, but you still can't give him the reward or say he's on the level of a person who's not even attracted to it. I mean, that has to be the highest level. Moshe Rabbeinu has a desire to kill people, and obviously there's something lacking in the perfection of Moshe Rabbeinu. He wouldn't have such a desire. He's on a higher level and he doesn't have these. A person who has a desire, who is plagued with lowly desires, has to be, by definition, on a lower level. There's no way to explain it. That's what the Rambam says. That the person who is Oved Me'avah has to, by definition, be on a higher level. There's no possibility to say otherwise. So why does the Rambam say over here, just scharo harbe? He has a lot of schar. You see, because what I want to say is that the personality of an individual isn't just made up of a kovash yisitro or an oved me'avo. A person is a kovash yisitro, it means there's also parts of his nature that are oved me'avo as well. And there's a person both has both. The Rambam, when the Rambam says his reward is great, he means insofar as this particular aspect of being Kovach Es Yitro is very great. Because insofar as Kovach Es Yitro, he has removed himself. He has removed himself from the Maisa Avera, you say. But, so therefore he shouldn't think that he's not on the level of the Tzaddikim that never sinned, because he has this advantage. It doesn't mean either that there is no disadvantage. That's a question in the Gemara. And to which person is on a higher level? Which one is, there's a defect and a gain and a loss in each situation? It's difficult to weigh, very difficult to weigh. But the fact is that when the Rambam says Schoro Harbei Ma'od, say, ask me a question. But what about an Oved Me'avo has more schar? The Rambam's saying all things being equal, he's a Kovach Es Yitro. Everybody is both. He's a Kovach Es Yitro and he's an Oved Me'avo. On this aspect of his life, he's greater. There's one aspect that's greater. So therefore, he shouldn't think that he's removed from the Midas HaTzadikim. But it doesn't mean that he partakes of the same phenomena as the Tzadikim. But still, in terms of level of perfection, you can't say that he's inferior. On the contrary, in one aspect, he's greater. In one aspect, he's greater. But it's not a disagreement. It doesn't argue with the Medrash that Rabbeinu Yonah quotes, that a person who never sinned definitely has that advantage that he is not attracted to evil. The attraction has to be there. Once a person does a sin, it's impossible to avoid. So Maisa Vera basically leaves an indelible trace. There's no way to remove that. The only thing is that through Kavishas HaYetzer, another aspect is brought out, that he removes himself completely from the attraction. He's pushed to the other side. But nevertheless, in terms of the perfection of the soul, I mean, you have to recognize that there is a permanent defect. There is a permanent defect. So here are two different features, and the question is, how do you weigh these features? That's the question. The tzaddik is comprised of an Oved Me'avo and a Kvish Sayetzer. Basically, insofar as the Maisa Vera is concerned, I would say that the Maisa Vera is a defect insofar as allowing the person to reach an Oved Me'avo. That's what I would say. But I want to express it a little further. Because once a person has done a Maisa Avera and he's attracted to it, so even though he controls himself, controlling himself does not remove the attraction. What it removes is that the attraction does not affect his actions, you see. But the attraction always remains there in the back of his mind. So that is a defect which would play a role, which would reduce the Oved Me'avo aspect. Because Oved Me'avo means that he's not attracted at all. All his energy is directed towards the mitzvahs and towards Torah. So in that respect, it's a loss. In the respect of Oved Me'avo. But it's a gain insofar as the Kovach Es Yitro is concerned. Since a person is made up of both phenomena, no one is simply an Oved Me'avo. I mean, that's talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. But I mean to say, on a practical level, what we define as a tzaddik and a rosh, we speak in practical terms. A tzaddik is both. A tzaddik is an Oved Me'avo, and he's a Kovach Es Yitro, and an Oved Me'ira also. He has to have both phenomena. No one can just be, he's an Oved Me'avo, there's no Kvish Seyetzer. So the Rambam says, insofar as he has this aspect, he can't say that he's deficient, because he has a gain in one area. But insofar as the loss, there is certainly a loss. The loss will affect him. It'll make him more difficult to actually become to reach it over Me'avo. That's why the Gemara says that then it's when is it that the Averis becomes a chuyos if he reaches that level of over Me'avo. If he doesn't reach that level, it still remains. It attracts his soul, and it prevents him from reaching the level of Ava. That's what the Chay does. And it's only an advantage insofar as Kovach Es Yitro is concerned. But then again, with regard to susceptibility, that's a different phenomenon. That's the Gemara Daf Chof Tes. There's no contradiction in the Gemara Daf Chof Tes between the Gemara on Daf Lama Dal Lama Beis and Brachos. Because Lama Dal Lama Beis is evaluating his state, and presently he's in a good state. That's a question of evaluation, the gain versus the loss. But the question of susceptibility is a different question. And when the Rambam mentions he has schar, yeah, he has schar because Kovach Es Yitro. But you see, the Rambam says the schar is because Kovach Es Yitro. But insofar as Oved Me'avo is concerned, it's a defect. Because once, that's what the Medrash says, once he enjoys an Avera, every enjoyment that a person has in this world, the enjoyment tells him something. It tells him this is the good. He enjoyed it, it feels good. It's very difficult for people to avoid the philosophical premise that if something feels good, it is good. That is something which everybody is susceptible to. So if a person does a Maisa Avera and it feels good, he enjoys it, he's attracted to it. He doesn't remove himself, but the attraction is there. You're saying it prevents the development of the Oved Me'avam. Prevents that development. But he can't, of course he can break through. Nothing's impossible. Nothing ain't davar mifnei atshuva. A person can break through that also. But basically it stayed. Yes, it makes it that much more difficult. I would just like to mention one more thing before we leave. That there's a... All right, maybe we'll leave for next week. Okay, what's the question? So the way we explain our Benyon is based upon the steer in the Gemara's in Brachas. Okay? That one Gemara says that Makom Shebali Chuvamdin ain't Sadiq Gumarichan Lama. That's one Gemara. And the other Gemara says, this is Gemara with Shmuel HaKatan, says that a person who was a Chote is never on the level, he's always suspect. He's always suspect. So he's always suspect to reverting back to his original ways. That's what the Gemara says in Daf Kaf Tes. It says it's an open contradiction, so he answered that there's two different phenomena. Insofar as Kafisha Sayyidah, it's true that the person that's Baal Tshuva is on a higher level, because he was Kovesh as Yitzhak, like the Rambam says, and he went to the opposite side. But insofar as the danger of reverting back, once a person was a balavere, didn't have vera, it always leaves an indelible trace upon his mind, upon his soul, and there's always the danger that the soul will revert back to its original its original methods of satisfaction. So, so far as that's concerned, the soul is on a lower level. The soul is on a lower level. Ain't a doma. That's what the Medrash says. It's ain't a doma. A person that did nevera and did tshuva to a person that never did nevera. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay. So that's why he says, Ratzalai says, balei tshuva yesh lam lahafrish min amuta ki inyan shechotu bo. Don't have to be so cautious, but a person is in a greater state of susceptibility, it will never lose that susceptibility. Insofar as that is concerned, he is on a lower level. The soul is on a lower level. That's the Rabbeinu Yonah. It's an interesting Rabbeinu Yonah. Okay, well, let's go further now. Let's go further.
Next question?
Yep. The process of Kfirsha the Yetzer itself is a perfection. He's involved in to a greater degree in the process of Kfirsha the Yetzer. Kfirsha the Yetzer is a perfection. It's a state of perfection. So since he's involved to a greater degree in Kfirsha the Yetzer, he's exerting greater Kfirsha the Yetzer. Kfirsha the Yetzer per se is perfection. It means the person who's involved in Kfirsha the Yetzer is involved in an act of perfection. It's not the level of Ava, but it certainly is an act of perfection. And so far as this Baal Tshuva is concerned, while it's true he's dealing with a more susceptible soul, but as long as he's dealing with it properly, he's involved in a greater state of self control, of Kfirsha Yetzer, which itself, the process itself, is a state of perfection. The soul is involved in perfecting itself and being cautious against the Maisa Vera. That is a greater state of perfection. Okay, let's go further now. It's a very interesting Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah talks about he continues with his mashal. He says, V'chol arotza l'lavos yovo v'yovo. Whoever wants to borrow the mashal of the storekeeper, that the store is open, and people come to the store to take whatever products then they want. And the store is open, and they take whatever they wish. But meantime, the storekeeper is keeping a cheshbon of everything they take, and he's writing the bill for the for those individuals. Okay. Now, he says like this. He says, it's free, you can take whatever he wants. He says, the fools think that the world was created for enjoyment, for pleasure. Aval atzadikim kol machshavosam v'chol hanoosam lios nekiyim l'kayem amitzus. But the tzadikim, all their intent and all their intentions and all their enjoyment is, all their concern really is that they should be free or clean to be mekayem the mitzvahs. V'chol adam bor l'atzmo v'ashrei mi sheyivchar tova. Happy is he who chooses the good. Okay. We'll have to get back to it. It's an important point, what he mentions over here, that the fools think that to enjoy themselves the world was created, because basically you could argue that point. You could say, what do you mean? And the tzaddikim don't think that the purpose is to enjoy themselves. He says in the next sentence, so that's also a form of enjoyment. So apparently, right? And we always say that the tzaddik is the happiest person. He has the happiest existence. So the Gemara says that the Rambam quotes many times. The individual, one of the Tanayim, when he saw all the people that came to the Mikdash, he said that all these people are created for me, because he experienced a certain type of enjoyment. He recognized that he's reached a state of happiness that is so great that he felt that he was able to express himself by saying that the whole of the Bishvili Nivra Olam, that he sees the reason for the whole creation, all of humanity even. So Chazal would seem to say that the person who is the greatest person is also the happiest person. So it seems to be, yeah, that the world was created for pleasure. What's the difference between that and the idea of the Russia? I mean, we always say that the tzaddik is always the individual who gets the most out of life. The Gemara says that the world was created for tzaddik and gemurim. Tzaddik and gemurim. So that's the highest level and the happiest state of man. The purpose of the Torah is to make a person happy, to give them a happy existence. So the tzaddikim are really, they have the same idea. The only thing is that they maintain that the pleasures are different pleasures. Pleasure of learning, pleasure of doing mitzvahs, different pleasure. But it would seem, one could argue, that the tzaddikim also maintain that the world is for pleasure. So why is their position so different than the Rishayim? Okay?
One is a byproduct of the effort, whereas the Russians, its whole goal is just the pleasure per se.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. We'll elaborate on that a little more. Okay, now it goes further. There's an Ephraim in Odom Ledaito, Ketzat, Kishiodea Vizocher Ha'ovon She'osa. Then he says, "If an Ephraim and Adam and God, if an Ephraim and Adam midaito v'shelo midaito, and God exacts payment from man, both to his knowledge, according to his knowledge, and whether he understands or whether he doesn't. Ketzat kishiyodei v'zochar avon she'osa kshebo aparoni yaseilov makir mashgiach ki mitneo so'achet." So the person understands and he sees something bad happens to him and he understands why it happens. So he recognizes that it happened because of his sin. V'ashrov. And this person is fortunate. Shal yedezem matztik es adin. V'chozer b'shuva u'meskapa lo avon. Because through that, he justifies the din that God has placed upon him. And he does shuva, and then the sin is forgiven for him. Vishalolodaita. Shlodan is Ketzah, Gunshi Yisurin Boinalov. He has troubles and pains. Vaina Zokar Alachatoy Mashar. So he doesn't remember the sins that he did. Vyeshoshvin Kilo Bidinya Volan Yisurin. Some people think that it's not just that they should have these travails, these painful situations, the pain, the suffering. Kiomrim Sadikamanachna Volochatana, because they say we're righteous and we haven't sinned. And why should we have this terrible tragedy that has occurred? The Amusa below tshuva. He says, oh, these people will die without tshuva. The Salatan lo samas. And their evil will not die. Kirshiu adin vitzdiku atzman. Because what they did was they said the din is unjust. And they justified themselves. Oy lohen, woe unto them. Oy le pigrein ki pasha b'gufam. Because woe unto their substance, because they have sinned with their very essence. Mashal lemelach. This is a mashal like this. Shama l'avdo. Leich u'mashkein l'ploni. Halach u'mishkeno. It's like a king that told a servant, he says, go exact payment from this person. Vosu yishen ezocha sechov. He doesn't remember the debt. V'hut zoik v'temor. V'temor al-mashkenin also. And this person cries and he wonders why they are taking away his possessions. V'ardover moser olibo. And really, he should know it. He should recognize it. Kach mishin afroim menem shamayim shalol daita. That's the same thing when the person receives a punishment from God and he doesn't understand it. Avol kishezochachol. But when he remembers the debt, he says v'yodeyan. He knows ki bedin mashkinin also. That really, it's according to justice that they are exacting this payment. Ein adavar maser alibo kolkach. Yeah. All right. So that's what the Rabbeinu Yonah says. All right. He gives the mashal. Now, what that's really the end of the mashal. All right. The Yeshlem. Then the last point is the Yeshlem Amashi Yismucho. Amashi Yismucho. What does it mean? They have those who exact the payment have what to rely on. What does it mean? He says it means like this. The Yeshlem, the Maaseihem al Midas Adin, Vadin Din Emes. They have that which they can rely on in their actions, and the Din is a true Din. Alright, what does he mean by that? What he means to say is that what does he want to point out with that? Of course, I mean, he mentions before that the Din is just. But what is he saying here? The Yeshlem Maaseihem al Midas Adin, after they have what to rely on. Also, we have to understand what the whole mashal really is all about. Even though the Rambam makes short work of it, the Rabbeinu has a lengthy explanation, but the Rambam makes a very short work out of it. The Rambam just says, "V'zeh mashal mavur kavanos yedua." That's it. It's clear. It's understood, and that's it. What is the mashal really for? What does the mashal really tell us? It's an interesting mashal. And what he's saying here, we have to understand. What is it trying to get at, basically? What's the basic idea? There's another interesting thing. It says in the beginning of the mashal, it says, a kol tzofoy. Right in the beginning where it says, a kol tzofoy, so the Rabbeinu Yonah says, this is just like it's written in Tilim Kuf Lametes Aleph. Okay? And you take a look at Tilim Kuf Lametes. So it says like this. Lanatzeach with David, Mizmor, Hashem Chakartani Vateda. You have analyzed me, understood me, and you have knowledge of me. And even as it says an interesting thing, he says, "Zeh Mizmor Nichbad Maod." This Mizmor is very, very extremely important. Bedarke Hashem, in the ways of God. V'ein be'ela hamisha sfarim mizmor kamol. Says there isn't in the entire five sfarim of Tilim, there isn't another mizmor of this kind. U'kefi binas odam b'darkei Hashem v'darkei Hashemah, and according to the way a person understands the ways of God and the ways of the soul, he is bonein b'tamov. He will be able to think into its reasons. Now, I'll explain it in a short method. He means to say, Derech Ketzor means he explains each piece. But he's not going to explain what the basic idea in this Mizmor is. And this Mizmor, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, really has the extremely deep ideas concerning human perfection, understanding the ways of God and understanding the soul. All right? let's take a look. What does the Mizmah say, really? The Mizmah is an interesting Mizmah. It says, Ate Yadati Shifti Vakumi. He says, You understand my sitting down and my getting up. Orchi Verivi Zerisa V'chol Derochai Eskanta. You've established all my ways before me. Kein Mila Bilshoni Hein Hashem Yadata Kula. There isn't a word on my tongue. You God know everything. Ochor V'kedem Tzartani V'kashes Alay Kapecha. You formed me, the front part of me, back part of me, Vatashas like a pecha, you've placed your hand upon me. Pliodas mi meni, nisgiva la'uchalo. The knowledge that's is astonishing. It's too high for me. I'm not capable of it. Ona elech meruchecha, where will I go from your spirit? Vana mi panecha evrecha, where can I escape from before you? Emesak shamayim shamata. If I go up to the heavens, there you are. Vatsiya Sha'ol Hineka. If I go down to the netherworld, there you are. Esa Kanfe Shocha Ashkenob Achaz Yom. Gam Shom Yod Chasanachani. Even in those places, in if I dwell at the ends of the ocean, even there your hand leads me. Vesochazeni Minecha. Your right hand takes hold of me. Okay? It goes on like that, the Mizmah. All right. Now, what is the old call? Can you rose and flacing and flying my secha? I'll praise you because of the astonishing works of your astonishing actions. The nafshi das mode. My soul understands very much. Okay. All right. And then he goes on to say, basically, God has knowledge of every aspect of his existence. Every aspect of his existence. And he goes on to speak about how valuable God's friendship is to him. What is the meaning of the Mizmah? Ibn Ezra says it's an extremely deep Mizmah. Deepest one of them. Yeah. Let's go back to what the Rabbeinu says on Nefron min Adam Shalola Daito. Shalola Daito means without his knowledge. So he mentions that people say that it's Shalola B'din. It's Shalola B'din. That the judgment is not really just. Why am I suffering so much? The judgment isn't just. And therefore, it's Shalola Daito. He doesn't have any knowledge, he doesn't have any understanding of it. And the Rabbeinu says that this is the worst state because he doesn't recognize the whole. Like a person who doesn't recognize the whole. Yeah. What really is the Rabbeinu getting at in terms of this whole mushel that Chazal give in Perek Shlishi Tezayin? What is the mushel? What's the essence of the mushel? The essence of the mushel we touched on before, basically. What it means to say is that there are two frameworks in which man sees the world. In one framework, he sees the world as a pleasure-seeking being. A pleasure-seeking being. That's a psychological framework. Pleasure-seeking being. That's what it means. It means the store is open. It means to say he's a pleasure-seeker. Where does a person want to go when they want to enjoy themselves? So they go shopping. They go to stores. The stores represent the satisfaction of a person's fantasy that he's seeking to satisfy. So he goes shopping. Goes to various stores and he sees all different things. And he's a pleasure seeker, basically. The shopper is really a pleasure seeker.
He's talking. He makes it pleasure.
I mean, so basically, he's a pleasure seeker. Shopper is a pleasure seeker. That's what a shopper is, seeking pleasure. Okay, that's one framework that a person works under. The shopper really, since he's a pleasure seeker, he tends to not to be. He tries at least not to be too concerned about the price. The price is painful. There's always a conflict that he has between his pleasure-seeking and between what he has to pay for his pleasure. And basically what he does is he represses from his mind the price he has to pay for the pleasure. That's why people who run into debt, they run up big bills.
Credit cards
is the whole institution. What's the institution of credit cards? The institution of credit cards basically is to, right. Later means you can deny right now how much the payment is going to be. That's basically the idea.
You have all the pleasure.
That's the idea. Right, you have all the pleasure now. You don't have to be concerned about the outcome, about the reality of the outcome. You see, that's why in casinos, they give a person chips. They chips. The whole idea, this has worked out. I mean, these people know what they're doing. This is a system. They realize that the pleasure of gambling is great, but there's a tremendous danger. Danger is people realize that they're losing money. So therefore, it's worked out, all system. Chips, and chips aren't money, but then you have to pay later for the chips. You pay for them, but once you have the chips, you have a credit line, and you get all the chips you want, and the payment is postponed. The reality of the payment is removed from the person's mind. So, and it's geared that way, it's worked out that way, so that there shouldn't be anything standing in the way of the pleasure seeker. They're making money off pleasure seekers. They're making money off realists over there. Reality is a danger. Reality is a danger. And many things are done in order to keep people in that state of mind. The state of mind of the pleasure seeker. As a matter of fact, from what I understand, like certain casinos, they keep the lights in a certain constant state.
Okay.
So that people should be unaware. Shouldn't be disturbed about daytime, nighttime is always the one state of the pleasure seeker to be maintained throughout. That's the business. I mean, they work in the area, their minds, and they can't believe they did. So basically, that's really one attitude of the a state of mind of the pleasure seeker. And this state of mind isn't just the state of mind of a shopper, but basically it's a state of mind that people have in looking at life in general. That's a state of mind. Now, that's really what he means when he says that the Russia, he says the Russia, he says Ksilim actually, says the fools. The fool and Russia are the same thing, because the Russia is nothing more than the person who is not in reality. The fool thinks ki lehonos bo nivra olam, which means to say that his whole purpose in life is just to attain pleasure. Now you see there's another point over here that he mentions when he says shalola daito. He says people, that seems to be another point. How does that fit into the mashal? The fact that people think we're really good, we're righteous. And why did this happen to us? The amusu b'lo tshuva. And they die without tshuva. What does he mean to say over here? What's the connection between these two points? The connection between these two points is that he's telling you really what the underlying emotion is that's responsible for maintaining the psychology and the frame of mind of the pleasure seeker. You see? The frame of mind of the pleasure seeker is maintained by one thing. It's maintained by the fact that he can't recognize that he did something wrong. What does that mean? That means it stems from the narcissistic side of the human personality. See, the narcissistic side of the human personality is the part that wishes to maintain that all his feelings and all his internal, his natural, what he considers to be his natural internal strivings are just and are right. The narcissism is the part of a person that loves the self and wishes to maintain the self. It can't tolerate any breach in the image of the self. And therefore, what it does is, simply, it takes all its own emotions, its natural emotions, and it justifies them. It can't see anything, it cannot see anything wrong. On the contrary, the love of the self, it has a tremendous need to love the self. And the love of the self becomes identified with self-seeking, with the self-seeking part of man. So that the pleasure seeker is in the first instance, he's a pleasure seeker. But the only thing is, there's a problem with the pleasure seeker. The pleasure seeker knows that the other side of the coin, he has to pay. There's a price. There's a price. How does he overcome that reality of the price? What method does he use to overcome the reality of the price? Okay? Yeah. The people who are the businessmen, the people who are running the businesses, they try to help him overcome it. You see? But there must be an underlying mechanism that's working within him. There's nothing that they could do if it's not something that's inherent in man that they're catering to. What is that part of man what is that part of man that permits him to be swayed by all the shenanigans of the entrepreneurs? How does it work? What permits him to do it? The part of him that allows them to take advantage of him is the narcissistic part of man. The narcissistic part of man is the part that simply wants to recognize that whatever he does is reality, is right, and it refuses to recognize that there is an external, there is another reality which he's denying. You see, that's the emotional state. That's why it says, we asked before, it says that, why does it say, V'yeshtonam amashiyah smuchu? They have what they can rely on. They have what to rely on. What do you mean they have what to rely on? Those who, the creditors, have what to rely on. Of course they have what to rely on. God sends them, naturally they have what to rely on. No, what it means is like this, Almidas adin, the Rabbeinu Yonah says, B'maaseihem, Almidas adin, V'adin din emes. What does it mean, adin din emes? Of course it's not. What is he telling you? What he's saying is, no, din din emes means that's reality. That's reality. They have a lot to rely on. Because what they're working with is the reality principle. The reality principle. So the pleasure seeker is the one that denies the reality principle. How does he deny the reality principle? One mechanism. There's a narcissistic barrier. There's a narcissistic barrier. The narcissistic barrier prevents him from seeing the reality. And that's why they help him out. They say credit cards, you have to pay now and pay later, and chips and things. But what are they doing really? They're catering to the narcissistic emotion. The narcissistic emotion is the one that really protects him from seeing the reality. And that's why the Rabbeinu Yonah says that v'nefroyim midaito v'shalom midaito. What does it mean? Midaito says very good. Midaito means where the person can see the reality. There's a break in the narcissistic barrier. But all too often it's shalom midaito. Shalom midaito. Shalom midaito means that in spite of the reality that imposes itself on the sinner, in spite of the fact that one thing after another happens which would indicate to him that something's wrong, he should change his ways, there's some defect in him, no. It can't penetrate. It can't penetrate. Because basically what is the force that's preventing him from seeing the reality? The reality represents God's reality. What prevents him from seeing the reality? It's a narcissistic barrier. Narcissistic barrier is the escape that the person actually sets up for himself through that emotion. Through the emotion of narcissism in which he can deny what the reality is. It maintains him as a pleasure seeker. It maintains the individual as a pleasure seeker. Now what about the Chacham? What about the Chacham? And here you have a dilemma. Why? Because the point is that what could motivate a person really to raise himself to a higher level, there's only one thing that can motivate a person to raise himself to a higher level. Because if the pleasure seeking was successful, he would never. There would not be a chance for the person to change. How would he change? I mean, if you take away the reality principle, if it wasn't Ephraim Imena, if he didn't have to pay, if there wasn't a reality which charged him for his transgressions, so he would never change. He's in a perfect situation. You see. So what actually is responsible for the individual changing? It's basically it's the reality. The reality is the only thing that can save him. The reality is the only thing that can save him. That's why he says that the person that does tshuva means that he recognizes that his way of life is causing him great pain. So the only way he could, what actually would change a person from being a Rasha, the only thing that changes a person from being a Rasha is the fact that he realizes that he's not attaining the pleasures that he's supposed to be attaining. There's a price for the pleasures. But what is his motivation? His motivation still, he still remains a pleasure seeker. The only thing is that what he has to do now is he recognizes this is not really the way to attain the pleasure. But the only motivation he has is the pleasure. So how could he raise himself to a higher level? Because he will simply be seeking pleasure in another area again. So now he'll say, okay, so this doesn't work. So now he'll remain a pleasure seeker, but he'll be a pleasure seeker in the area of Torah. What other choice does he have? He has no choice. Because his basic drive is to seek pleasure. And actually what Yadus maintains is that a pleasure seeker, even in the area of Torah, still can't be a perfected man. Apparently the perfected man is not a pleasure seeker anymore. Why is the perfected man not a pleasure seeker? What removes him from that state? How does he get rid of it? In other words, the drive is there. It's like a catch 22. I mean, what is he going to do? He's going to try to. He sees that this is that this is no good. So therefore, I'll seek a superior pleasure. So he's still a pleasure seeker. He's still a pleasure. The answer is that as a person becomes attached to reality, the true individual is on a high level. Recognizes has very little interest in his own personal pleasure. Why? Because he recognizes what he is in terms of the framework of the whole, and therefore seeing that he is simply a one individual that lives a very short existence in terms of the whole of the universe. He lives and he dies, and he could see his life as a whole. There is no way that he can attach importance to whether he actually has pleasure or whether he doesn't have pleasure. It's a very unimportant element in reality. You see? When he attains the view of reality, so his own self, looking at the view of reality, one individual living in this universe for a very short span of time, relatively speaking, it can't make any difference whether he had this pleasure today or whether he didn't have the pleasure today. The whole pleasure-seeking process becomes subordinated under a greater view of the whole. And he becomes attached to the view of the whole. Once he becomes attached to the view of the whole, his own, whether he actually had pleasure or didn't have pleasure, becomes a very unimportant aspect of reality. You see? And that's what actually we said before when we did Kehelis. That was the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra says that first, the part of man which is how does a person get to perfection? He says two stages. The first stage is the part of the reigning part of man drives him to perfection, because he recognizes that he's not really attaining what he's supposed to be attaining from reality. He recognizes the pain. He recognizes the price. The reality is the price. So that drives him somewhere else. But then it drives him to the area of Seichel. But once Seichel comes into the picture, then Seichel takes over. What does Seichel do? Seichel places himself in its perspective, because he could view himself as simply one small part of an entire system. What difference does it make in the entire system of the world whether today I had my pleasure or I didn't have my pleasure? It's ridiculous. It's absurd. The whole idea is absurd. So the Seichel, the Tzara Sichli, the reality principle, turns on the pleasure seeker, you see, and it removes him. What is the essential pleasure seeking mechanism? It's the narcissism. What is narcissism? Narcissism is basically an overestimation of the self, of the importance of the self. The self becomes the center of the universe. That's the narcissistic drive. And once he gets out of that narcissistic state, you see, the self becomes very small. And it becomes too rational to really think that it's important whether or not he had his pleasure today or whether he didn't have his pleasure today. Yes, that's a good question. Why we don't count Jews is because, on the contrary, because we say that man can't be subject to a quantitative phenomena. You can't just say there's X amount of people, because man really is not. You can't just count them. Like you count sheep, you see. So on the contrary, it seemed to show that what we're saying now, we should count them. Moreover, another question we could ask is, what is the Pshat in the Chazal who say, when they say that, look, that the Shvili Nivra'olam, or this Tana that comes to the Regal, and he says, everything was created for me. So it would seem on the contrary, that it's a tremendous egoistic thing. The answer is like this. The answer is, it's a strange kind of phenomena, really. It's almost hard to describe because it sounds contradictory, but it's not a contradiction. What happens is as follows. What happens is that he sees himself in terms of a pleasure seeker as being a very unimportant endeavor, whether he attains his pleasure or not. But nevertheless, he sees that man was constructed in a certain way, you see, that he can rise to unbelievable heights. And what happens is he becomes awed by that concept of man, you see. He becomes awed by that concept of man. And he looks at himself not as an individual anymore, but simply a metaphysical phenomena. And he's overawed by the metaphysical phenomena of man. In that type of view, you see, he is not a pleasure seeker anymore, and yet he recognizes that man is an unbelievable creature, and he's happy. Of course, there's a certain happiness that he partakes of that, but he is not. It's not a happiness of a self-seeking. It's not of a self-seeking nature. It's an appreciation. It's a state of appreciation. You see, and actually, this is expressed in that tillum. That tillum expresses this idea. It's tricky because it sounds like it's turning on itself, but it's not. It's a different phenomenon. In that capital of Tehillim, that idea is brought out. See? It says, Hashem chakatani vateda. And he says, wherever I go, hey ein mi lo bilshoni, hein Hashem yadata kula. It means like this, that a person who is on the level of a pleasure seeker sees himself as distinct from God. In other words, God is an external entity, and he's a different entity. Now, the way he relates to God is, he knows this is really a person who is serving God on the first level, the lowest level. So to him, God represents certain obligations. He has to fulfill certain obligations. He feels certain obligations, he feels satisfaction. Now he feels he's close to God. But then at other times, he simply can't live with the idea of God constantly in his presence. It's disturbing because he feels he's doing things that take him away from God. So he approaches God, he removes himself from God. God to him becomes something which is something which he recognizes, of course, he recognizes, but he approaches him and then he simply has to withdraw. That's a lower level. That's not an Ovi Me'ava. That's what Rashi says in the Chumash, when Moshe Rabbeinu said, when the Jews told him, Va'at Tadaber Eleinu. Va'at Tadaber Eleinu. So he says, Toshash Kochi Kenekeva. He says, I got weak. I became weak like a female. Over there, female is not a degrading term. What it means is, it represents the concept of passivity. It means he simply couldn't move. Because in the Torah, female represents passivity and male activity. It doesn't mean that in every instance that's the way it is, but it means that's the representation. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, I became weak, I couldn't move. Why? Because I wanted you to be Oved Me'ava. What is Oved Me'ava? Oved Me'ava means that one is constantly in God's presence. But a person who's an Oved Me'ira can't envision himself always in God's presence. He doesn't. It's too disturbing psychologically. So sometimes he feels he's with God. Sometimes he has to withdraw. You see. But this capital in Tehillim really is stating a man who never withdraws from God. See? He says, Ana elech murechecha, where can I go from your spirit? Vana mi panecha evrach, where can I escape? In mesach shemayim shemata, if I go up to the heavens, there you are. Vatziya shaol inecha, if I go to the netherworld, there you are. Esa kanfei shochash, eshkenal bachriz yom, wherever I stay, at the ends of the oceans. Gam sham yod chasan cheni, v'sach hazeni yiminecha. What is the essence of the capital? He's reflecting, he's trying to show a person, an individual, who is constantly in awe of God. There is no way, there isn't a moment that he's removed from God. That's the highest level, that's the Oved Me'ava. So he constantly is aware of God, and not only that, he's aware of God's knowledge of himself. It means the self is completely gone. As long as a person envisions himself in a way that he approaches God or removes himself from God, there's a tremendous area of self. But once a person reaches the level of an elder man, the self is all, everything is simply, he's enveloped by God. There is no area where he's removed from God. He's always involved in the appreciation of the Chochmas Hashem. And that's it. He's simply enveloped by God. There's no, the self is completely gone. But even with regard to, with regard to himself, you see, it's not just with regard to external knowledge that this is so. Not just with regard to understanding the cosmos, but it's with regard to his very nature as well. With regard to his very nature as well. You see? Where he mentions, Odcho al kino ros niflesi niflo masecho v'nafshi yodas ma'od. Even insofar, Ocho v'kedem tzartoni v'toshes alai kapecha. It means, you've created me in the forward part of me, the backward part of me, my whole essence, and you placed your hand upon me. Pliyodas mimeni nisgivolo uchalom. Even himself, perceiving himself as a metaphysical being, and the tremendous chokhmah that's involved in his own self, he can't fathom that chokhmah, and he recognizes that the chokhmah of his very essence, of his own nature, is endless. There is no area where he doesn't see chokhmah Hashem, where his energy isn't driven towards the appreciation of chokhmah Hashem, even in the very appreciation of his own self. And that's the point of those Chazal, where Chazal say that the concept of Bishvili Nivra Olam, the concept that this Tana said everything was created for me, it wasn't as a pleasure seeker. He wasn't saying, "Ha, I got the pleasure. These people didn't." That's a low level. Pleasure seeker is a low level. What he was saying was that he was awed by, because he experienced what human perfection could be, he was awed at how God created man in such a way that such a perfected creature could live. And he was only able to know that because he experienced it. A person that doesn't experience doesn't know it. But that very experience becomes converted into an appreciation. And he is not a pleasure seeker. On the contrary, his own personal pleasures are meaningless. It's nonsensical. But the appreciation of Chochmas Hashem, of God's Chochmah, and how man was created to appreciate that Chochmah, and what perfection of man is something which is pliyodas mimeni. Pliyodas. He's astonished. He's astounded at the knowledge that's involved in the whole system of the universe. The system, the external system, and the system of man also. Man, that's why there's the Medrash says man is an olam katan. What does it mean, olam katan? The microcosm and the macrocosm. So man is all the philosophers have their mushel. It means that in man himself is a world of chokhmah. And it's a world that reflects the chokhmah of the cosmos. Because it's tied together. There's an interrelationship between the chokhmah of the cosmos and man as a part of the cosmos. He sees himself. He's so removed from himself that he himself becomes an object of appreciation in terms of chokhmah. That's the height of removal from the self. That's why you can't count people. Because in recognizing man as a metaphysical being, he's not all eliminated. He can't be just included in the sum, X amount. Because he's a phenomenon, he's a metaphysical phenomenon, and he's not countable. You see, that's the concept. So it's an appreciation of the self without the self-seeking drive. That's the highest state. That's Kuflam and Tessentol. That's Kuflam and Tessentol. And that's basically the whole mushroom.
Can you count Brian?
That of that phenomena, of the phenomena of Adam. It means man, Adam is can be great, but he can't be great unless he has the ideas of the Torah, unless he partakes of the eternal ideas of the Torah. If he doesn't partake of those ideas, there's no way. What happens to the person is he simply degenerates into Avodah Zarah. And that represents that doesn't represent man anymore. It doesn't represent Adam anymore. There are a few individuals. Tzadikim u'Mosolim is halacha, so there have to be people who are tzadikim u'Mosolim. But they're very rare. Those individuals, yesh lahem chelek olam haba. It's not something which is against, it's not a prejudice. It's simply the certain requirements for perfection. Without tayag, you can't have perfection. A guy converts, he becomes a Jew, he can become the greatest person in the world. Nothing against going. But what it's saying is that there is a level which is, without the ideas of the Torah, it's completely impossible. It's impossible. Even with the philosophers. So some philosophers have reached at certain times, certain occasions, have come to certain ideas which Yadzis recognizes, and which are true ideas, like the Rambam says. But those people are few and far between. That's the concept. But to reach the level that he's talking about is where man reflects upon himself as a marvelous wonder. But in understanding the marvelous wonder, there's no narcissistic ego anymore. He's an appreciator. He's an appreciator of himself as a wondrous creature. And it doesn't really matter that it's he himself. It's simply the phenomena of Adam. That's the state of perfection. That's basically the mashal. That's what the mashal represents. The whole mashal with the storekeeper and the and a colt sofui is to teach man to rise from the level of the pleasure seeker, where he sees himself distinct from God, and where he's involved, where he endows himself with a lot of energy about his own importance, and to reach the level of reality where, on the contrary, he sees himself as a wondrous creature of God. And in perceiving himself, he perceives the greatness of God. That's the whole Mizmor Tillim. Mizmor Lashem, and it's a praise to God. That's what the whole Sefer Tillim is about, basically. Tillim, what is the Sefer of Tillim? Sefer of Tillim is the whole idea of David HaMelech writing Tillim is what? Not so much the ideas per se. Ideas are written in other places, but it represents the perfect, it reflects the perfect state and attitude of the perfected, the truly perfected individual. That's what the Sefer Tillim is about, really. So it's the ideas, but not the ideas themselves, but the ideas as how these ideas work on an individual, and how they place them in a certain frame of mind, the perfected frame of mind. That's what the whole Sefer Tillim is about. That's based upon the idea in Yadus that we mentioned last week. That in Yadus, it's not enough just to write a system, a logical system of ethics, like Aristotle wrote, or like other philosophers wrote. It's important in Yadus to point out the states of perfection, what they are like, and what exactly is involved in these states. That's what Yadus does. That's different than any other philosophy. And that's what the Sefer Tillim is about, basically. As a matter of fact, that's the institution of Nazir. The institution of Nazir. But you see, a Nazir means a person abstains from pleasure. But the Gemara says that a Nazir is a chote. He has to bring a carbon. Why does he have to bring a carbon? Because that's not the perfected state. The state in which a person has to remove himself from physical pleasures. It's a necessary state. But he's a chote. He has to bring a carbon. Why? Because that's not the ultimate state. In the ultimate state, there's no such thing. There's no reason for him to deny himself. Denial, the process of denial is a necessary one on the road to perfection. But it's not perfection itself.
There's no reason to...
The point is, yes, you're right. In the perfected state, there's indifference. There's indifference because his own self is not, he's not self-seeking anymore. He's totally indifferent about himself. But he's neither involved in denial, nor is he involved in acquisition of pleasure. He's involved in neither of those two states. So what, how does he live? He lives simply naturally. He naturally does what is... in other words, that's when the Nefesh HaBahami works in its natural state. There's no energy directed there, but there is a Nefesh HaBahami. So it will seek out that which is necessary for its existence. That's what the process is. Tzadik ochel l'shov v'nafsho. It means that a tzadik doesn't eat for the pleasure of the food. He's not a pleasure seeker. It's l'shov v'nafsho. He eats because of his soul. Sustenance of a soul is nefesh. You see, so it's a different kind of state. The Rambam tries to describe it in one of his medical writings. He tries to describe it. So it's an interesting. It's a book that they entitled "On the Preservation of Youth." So the Rambam wrote this book for the Sultan, and the Rambam writes over there. He says the only happy person is a person who's philosophically perfected. Tries to impress upon the Sultan that you cannot achieve happiness unless you reach a certain philosophical state. And he says, in that state, he calls it the even keel. The even keel. The even keel means there are neither great pleasures nor great disappointments. There's no, he remains on an even keel. which means he partakes of what he has to from this world, basically because of necessity. It's a natural process. He's involved in a natural process, but there's no energy directed towards pleasure-seeking or towards denial. Neither state. That's really the perfect state. That's the importance of Yadis. Yadis takes the trouble to describe the phenomena so we can know what it is, even though we're not on that level, but we should have an accurate vision of what that state is. It's important, Yadis maintains, even if we aren't on that level, to understand what that level is like. That is something which...